Hi, I'm Karen Hetrick. I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is June 16th, 2005. I have a sponsor who has a sponsor and a sponsor. I have a home group. It's the Friday night newcomers meeting on El Mirage, out there in El Mirage. If you're ever out that way, I'm 30 miles west of Phoenix. That's my home group. And I do have a service commitment besides sponsoring. Anyway, I'll talk about that later. So I am super duper nervous. Okay, so I'm going to share what it was like, what happened, and what it's like today. I was born in California, a town called Fairfield. It's in between Sacramento and San Francisco. My mother could not have children, so I was adopted and brought home when I was like less than 24 hours old. And I have an older sister who was also adopted, and she's 5 years older than myself. When I got sober, I remember my sister Anne telling me she remembered when I was 3 years old catching me in the kitchen drinking straight vanilla extract. You know, and I guess, I don't know, I do believe I was born an alcoholic. You know, I had that missing link that I didn't actually fit in, so I wanted to be an overachiever at everything. If I didn't do it perfect or above, I didn't want to do it. So I had a good, normal childhood. I can't blame my parents. You know, I had a very good childhood. No alcoholism in my direct family. But again, then I am adopted. Come the teenage years, it was around my eighth grade year, my sister had gotten married. And she had left the house, you know, getting married and everything. But at her reception that night, I stole 3 bottles of champagne. That was the first time. And I drank it with the neighborhood boys. And I remember, and this is not an original, feeling wittier, tittier, and prettier. You know, instantly that self, that relaxation that I could talk came over me. And I sought that because that made me feel good. It made me lose everything else. And I look back and I called it my liquid courage from that point on. High school years, you know, I did okay at first. And then I got into an altercation with someone. She actually kicked my booty. And my ego was so big, I had black eyes and I didn't want to go to school anymore. So I dropped out of high school. I continued to the Fairfield Sioux Soon Unified Adult School. And at 17, I got my GED and something else very important. I got a fake ID. My name then became Penelope Sue Gomez. And that allowed me to drink as a 17-year-old girl in bars. And that, you know, it's not a good place for a girl like me. I blacked out a lot. You know, my story goes, there were times that I would start off good, you know, and I could measure myself. I don't know how you guys do it, but I would go into the bathroom going, are you there yet? You know, in the mirror going, are you there yet? And I would never get there because then I would like overshoot my mark and I would be in a blackout. And I would wake up with people who I did not know or did not remember how I got there with. I remember one time someone said, Mary, wow, I really appreciate your education and being a teacher. And I was like, what the heck? I didn't, you know, who knows? I don't know, but I ended up getting pregnant at 19, and it was in this order. Then I got married, then I had the baby, then I left him and moved back in with my parents, and then filed for divorce. And it was in that order that that happened. And you know, I can say my picker was definitely broken, and that's what I'm gonna say about that one. We got divorced, and I lived at home with my parents. And I remember there were times my son was only a couple months old and I would tell my mom, I'm gonna go to the store, I need some diapers. I'll be right back. And I had good intentions of coming right back. There was this little seedy bar called The Rendezvous, and it was dark, and I loved it. And I would say, I'm just going to go have one drink. You know, I'd get the diapers, and then I'd go to The Rendezvous, and I wouldn't come home for 3 days. And that became a pattern for me. My mom, a couple months later, said, you know, enough is enough. If you don't straighten up, I'm going to fight for custody for your son. And that pulled my head out of my, you know, and I then became a master hider of my drinking. I moved out. I got into a little area that was nice. I always had a job, you know, but I didn't see that I had a problem yet. And alcohol was stronger than the love I had for my own child at that point, you know, and I couldn't stay stopped. And so that continued for years, and you know, I had some decent jobs, and when my son was about in fourth grade, I was working for an agriculture company in the finance accounting department, and they had closed a location, and they asked me if I would go travel to their new location up in Bend, Oregon. And I didn't even think twice about it. You know, I'm like, yeah, I'm there. So that was really the only geographic I ever made. And I felt at that time, that would be a new beginning for me. I wasn't gonna drink. I was away from home, away from family, away from all my friends. And I did that for a couple months. My son was like in the fourth grade, and I remember we moved in January 1992. And I remember just becoming a workaholic. We didn't celebrate any holidays that first year. You know, those first couple months, no Valentine's, no Easter. And it came about in May, Memorial Day. I was like, you know, I'm going to go to Albertsons and see what they have, any vodka. I went to Albertsons, and in Oregon, it is a state-run liquor state. So there was no hard alcohol in Albertsons on a Sunday. So I thought, you know, got the next best thing, got some wine, and did that, and that started my drinking again. Started it. I could not stop on my own. I remember it was within a couple months, my neighbor said, hey, I'm going to go shoot some pool at the bar downtown. You want to go? And I thought, But my son was old enough to babysit his kids. You know, my son's in fourth grade. And so I said, sure, let's go. So I went, and then I met husband number two. And but I didn't realize he was going to be my husband at that time. He was paying a lot of attention to me, and I just kind of said, why don't you go over there with some of those other women? Because I had really wanted to try to be a good mom for my son, you know? And that guy, he gave me a lot of attention, and so we ended up, he stayed there, but I went home, and my son and everything was fine. About a week later, my neighbor Jeff came over and said, hey, you want to go shoot some pool again? And I said, yeah, maybe that scary guy will be there. And he was. And this is how I dated. He came home with me that night. And, you know, he ended up, that was like in April, and that my son's birthday was in June, and he got two DUIs on my son's birthday that year. And so I remember the call from him, and I thought he lived in a house somewhere. I didn't know a lot about him because he just came home and stayed with me for a while, right? So he said, hey, you need to go get some bail money from my mom. And I'm like, okay, where is she? You know? And so that is how I met my future mother-in-law, was getting bail money for Fred. And so she said, okay, I'll give you this bail money on one condition. He can't come back and live with us. And in my head, I'm thinking, shit, he was living with you guys? And, you know, I mean, I'm like, okay, that's fine. So I go down, you know, and I'm going to bail him out of jail. And before he could be released, they said, we need to release him to a responsible party because he's going to be on house arrest. And I said, okay, I guess I'm it. And then within a couple months, he proposed and we were engaged. And a couple more months, we got married. And oh, don't you know, he was off house arrest by then. And that was, I remember his mom saying to me when he proposed to me, she goes, Karen, are you sure you want to do this? He's an alcoholic. And I was like, yeah, Absolutely. With a thought in the back of my head, nobody's going to focus on me. They're going to focus on him. And you know, that was how our marriage ran. And I can't begin to tell you the times that, oh gosh, even Christmases, when we would go see my parents, my mom would say, oh my gosh, there were so many bottles in the backyard. And I said, oh, those were Fred's. They were mine. I just became this master hider. I would talk to my family in blackouts and not remember talking to them. And I was actually pretty good, though, at calling them every Sunday. I was one of those alcoholics that I would start on Saturday with a good intention to, I had a great plan for the day to get a lot of stuff done or go do something. And then I would say, okay, after this coffee with vodka, I would say, I will do it. And then I would say, okay, one more coffee with vodka, I will do it. And then pretty soon the coffee was gone and the vodka was there. You know, that's how I rolled. And Fred was 10 years older than me. And he, I want to say, in my mind, was a worse alcoholic than me. You know, it takes what it takes. But I remember my son told me this story, and I remember it vividly. Fred came home. I had told him he had to go get sober. So he was trying to get sober, and he brought the big book to me, and I saw a chapter to the wives. And I'm sitting there in my chair with my tumbler drinking, reading chapter to the wives, getting really pissed off. Whoa. Okay, I was really pissed off. So then I remember I tried to stop drinking. And I didn't realize I was trying to control my drinking, but it came to a point my son on a Mother's Day came over and I was passed out. And he leaned over at me and he said, Mom, why are you trying to kill yourself? And he was sobbing. And I went, I don't know. And so that, again, wasn't enough to get me to stop. I couldn't do it on my own. But where we lived, there was this little gal next door named Margot. And I remember her telling me 5 years ago when she had moved in, she was always doing stuff. She was a single parent, going places with her two boys. And she said, I would be like, well, where are you going this weekend, Margot? And she'd go, oh, I'm going to an AA camp out. And I was like, oh, have fun. But you know what happened? I knew that she was sober through AA. The night came on a Thursday night that I sat there and I had been trying to stop drinking on my own and I couldn't. And I remember telling her, you know, Margot, Fred may have a problem, but I also have a problem and I don't know how to quit drinking. And she got real excited and she goes, oh, good, okay. And I'm like, she goes, so tomorrow night there's a meeting at the Environmental Center in Bend, Oregon. It's a speaker meeting. Can you think you can stay sober? And I said, I'll try. Well, that Friday night was payday. And usually, you know, 5:15 on Friday nights, boom, I was gone. I was off and running. But I had cashed my check. I hadn't drank yet. I had packed a bag. And Margot's house was right on the road. My house was set back. We were on an acre of property. And I remember my idea, what I was going to do is I was going to throw my truck in front of a semi on Highway 97. That was my idea. That's what I was going to do. So I'm backing down that driveway, and all of a sudden, Margot pops out. She goes, hey, you going to that meeting, Karen? And I said, I am, Margot. And she said, good, because I need a ride. And, you know, that was nothing but my first God shot coming into Alcoholics Anonymous. And I'm so grateful for her sharing her story about sobriety with me, even though I was really like, eh. So anyway, that night, I remember the two speakers. It was Tony and Roxy, and they told their stories. And I was grateful that it was a speaker meeting because I didn't have the courage to share, you know. And I cried and I laughed and I identified with both speakers. I could identify with them and how they were drinking. You know, and so that weekend, I didn't know a lot. You know, it was kind of foreign to me. Fred was still drinking and we had a detached little casita out there and I locked myself in the casita and I detoxed myself, which I do not recommend. And so Monday came, and Margo was at the door pretty early going, hey, there's a great 7 a.m. meeting. You want to go? And I said, sure. So that became my first morning meeting. I did a 7 a.m. called Attitude Adjustment in Bend, Oregon. And then she said, there's another one at that same place at 5:30. It was called Primary Purpose. And that became my other meeting I started attending. Because you see, you guys said don't drink in between meetings. I was terrified to go a whole day without drinking, but I could do the intervals. I could do a morning meeting, go to work, and then I could do an evening meeting. And then a lot of us would hang out together after the meetings. You know, and I remember how Fred hadn't gotten sober yet, but I was getting sober. You know, and I remember that day, I was crazier than a loon in early sobriety. And I remember you guys were saying some prayer that I kind of knew, and I was on my way to work after the meeting, and I'm banging on the steering wheel. How do you do that serenity prayer? Because I really wanted to drink. And I remembered it, and I ended up saying that serenity prayer all day through work. And it helped keep me sober. And then I went to the meeting at 5:30, and I just kind of kept doing that. And then I remember it was about the end of July. I was like, wow, I didn't think about a drink today. You know, that obsession had been removed. There's another God shot at this program. Again, you guys, it was foreign to me. You know, but I feel that I was fortunate. In early sobriety, there was a guy named Kenny. And another guy named Bob. Kenny was in the 7 a.m. Morning group that I attended. And he had just gotten custody of his twins back, and they were in kindergarten, and he was real excited about it. But he was also having a really hard time staying sober. And I remember Doris, which was one of the old timers, coming up to him and asking him, Kenny, have you done your fourth step yet? And he said, no, I haven't. And she said, it's gonna kill you. You need to do that shit. You know, and I'll be darned if he didn't die of alcohol poisoning that night. So that was huge for this alcoholic. I remember that was my first sober service I went to. At Kenny's service, a group of us went, and then we were all going out to Mexican food afterwards, and there was a guy from my other meetings, and I said, Bob, we're gonna go get some food. Why don't you come with us? And he said, no, I got something to do. And 2 weeks later, they found Bob with a bullet in his head. And he was the second sober service I went to. So there were some things that really made me sober up, knowing that this is truly life or death for me, you know? And one of the things that they said, because I started feeling better, you know, I get a couple months under my belt and I'm like, oh, maybe I'm not an alcoholic after all. Maybe I really don't need this program. And then someone pulled the rug out from under me. They said, you know, normal people don't question themselves if they're alcoholics or not. And I went, what? And that's true. I have a normie sister. You know, she drinks half a cocktail and she's fine because she doesn't like the way she's feeling. And I call that alcohol abuse. But I'm grateful that I heard those things. You know, I'm very grateful. The other things I heard was get a sponsor, do the steps, get involved in service. And so it was about December. I had about 6 months. And I had a real bad experience with some lady that took me under her wing, that it could have cost me my marriage, because by this time, Fred got sober. And he had some real bad health issues. He had cirrhosis of the liver. And he had served in the military, so he ended up going into White City, Oregon, the VA hospital there. So we would see each other on the weekends. And it was really kind of cool, because I did meetings where I felt comfortable and he did his meetings, but yet we would come together, you know, on the weekends and spend time and holidays together. So it was really an awesome, awesome time in my sobriety. But I remember thinking, you know, so after that real bad experience that almost cost me my marriage, steps out of order, I think it was in a grapevine that someone was terrified to ask to be, you know, ask someone to sponsor them, and that they went on an interview process. So I had a couple people lined out, you know, there were some prerequisites. I wanted them to take me through the steps by the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. I wanted them to be married to another alcoholic. I wanted them to at least have one child in sobriety, you know, have a kid so that you might, when I have kid problems, you could help me. And the fourth one was, I wanted them to be equally yoked with me spiritually. Oh my gosh, what an ego, right? And for whatever reason, I had heard Patty in a meeting saying how she takes women through the steps by the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And she was the first one I asked for an interview process for, I don't know why she said yes, but she met me at my house a couple days later. And you know, she told me a little bit about her. She had a husband in the program. She had a son. She took women through the steps by the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And you know, I heard this, it's none of your business what her spirituality is, Karen. She's got years sober. That is what I heard in my head. So we didn't even talk about it, you know? And she goes, well, I know you have other interviews, Karen, you know, so I'm gonna leave now. And I'm like, you know, in my mind, I'm like, no, stay, you're it. You know, and yeah, instantly I felt very connected to Patty and that I could trust her because she shared some things about herself like we do, you know? And so that was the journey into the steps for me. And, you know, those steps, I'll be honest with you, I didn't even know who the heck I was coming into these rooms. I didn't know what my favorite color was. I didn't know if I even had a style. I didn't know how to be a lady. I looked like a little barroom hookah, you know, and those steps were so important to me. And I know that this is about acceptance, you know, and that first step, admitting that I was powerless over alcohol and that my life had become unmanageable, that I had to finally accept that I was an alcoholic. That acceptance was huge because I lived in denial for a very, very long time. You don't have to do that. You know, it's like, and I remember hearing about acceptance as, you know, you can look at acceptance, take the emotion out of it, you know, black and white, see it for what it is. And that was huge for this alcoholic. You know, accepting that I needed help, accepting that this program, you guys kept sharing your stories about how you stayed sober. So going through the steps was amazing. My first roundup experience, I only had a couple months sober, and it was actually Roxy, the first, that speaker meeting that I met, that she had me at registration. And I remember going, oh my God, but they're telling me their last name's Roxy. And she just started laughing. She goes, it's okay at a roundup, Karen. I'm like, okay. But I had so much fun working that roundup. That was actually my first service. But getting with Patty, she said, okay, you're going to have to do service. You're going to have a home group. You know, and it's important to go to business meetings, which my first experience at a business meeting, I left crying. The old timers, the people who I loved, were all fighting and arguing. And I didn't understand that. And I was very upset. And then Patty said, well, why don't you come to my home group business meeting? And it was a lot different. It was very calm and more solution-based. And that was really important, you know, to get that home group. I got guilted into service work by a couple guys in intergroup. And I ended up doing the entertainment committee. And that was kind of fun because I had no clue how I was going to have fun in sobriety. I had no clue how to have fun without alcohol. I didn't know that that even existed for this alcoholic. And it was, we did the New Year's dance. And I remember the first time I danced with Fred before doing the steps, we literally were out on the dance floor arguing about who was leading who and what way we were gonna do this. And, you know, fast forward by Rogue River Roundup that year, I had finished my steps. And we were gliding on the dance floor. No, I shouldn't say gliding. He was playing the air guitar, and I'm flitting all around him. And we are just having a blast out there. The ones who glide on the dance floor that I really loved watching dance was Patty and Bill. They were amazing on the dance floor. So, you know, Fred was doing really good. He was also working his steps. And he got a year sober August 5th. I had my first year in June 16th, 2006, and he got his first year August 5th. And so we had in September, we had decided we were gonna have some vacation time with our family. We got the granddaughters together. We got his daughter together. I heard him make his amends to his ex-wife, who we were friends. I watched him talk to his daughter about his spiritual experience. I watched this stuff, and it was amazing. Actually, me and him, we liked to do the daily readings together. He would read the 24 hours, and I would read the daily reflections every morning on the phone. And that weekend, Labor Day weekend in September, we were reading the St. Francis prayer, and I remember it vividly. I said, it's better to give love than to receive love. And he looked at me and he goes, yeah. And so we both were there at that point in our marriage. What a gift it was. So that night I remember he ended up also being a diabetic, and he had some health issues, cirrhosis of the liver, and he was getting the interferon and stuff, but he was scheduled to come home in October. And that night I went and got him a sugar-free Marion Berry pie, and you know, we had a great, great evening together. And I left that morning. I dropped him off at the Dom, hugging him. And I remember calling Patty when I got back to Bend saying, we had the best weekend ever. This is where we were at with the St. Francis prayer, Patty. So I ended up going to a meeting at noon that day. And I remember I got asked to be a sponsor for the very first time. And I was so excited. And of course I called Patty. And then I called Fred. And we talked. He said, you're going to be a great sponsor, Karen. I'm so proud of you. And so then that night, it was scheduled that the entertainment committee was doing an end of summer flyer at my house. So there was three other alcoholics with me, and I'm in service, and we're doing the flyer. And I get a call. And it's a chaplain from the hospital over in Medford. And he said, your husband's been hit from behind. He was riding his bicycle. And he's here in pretty bad shape. You need to get here now. And it was kind of shocking, very shocking at that point. And I remember looking out and I saw Kevin from the entertainment committee, and he heard the conversation. And I said, Fred's been hit. I don't know if he's gonna make it or not. And he went outside. I knew he was praying for me. There was another alcoholic at the house that went in and called my sponsor. You need to get here. And then the other one didn't leave my side. So Patty came, and we proceeded to go over the mountains. And I didn't make it. He didn't make it. He had passed before I got there. You know, and I think about that. But in a way, this program has taught me to also look for the blessings. I can say he didn't see what hit him. And God took him at the most highest point of his life, and I'm so grateful for that. He had finished his amends and finished the steps, you know. And then Patty stayed with me that day. We got to go, you know, do some of the stuff that you do when someone dies instantly. Go collect their belongings. They asked me at the Dom if there was anybody who I wanted to talk to. And this program has taught me it's not always about me, but the nurse that had been working with him, Roberta was her name, I wanted to go thank her and let her know how much me and Fred loved her. And so Patty, I don't know if she remembers, but I remember this long hallway we were walking down, and Patty hadn't left my side at this point, you know, and there, I heard some footsteps behind me, and there was a gentleman that said, excuse me, are you Mrs. Wyatt? And I said, yes, I am. He said, we just want to say our condolences, and we're sorry you lost your husband. He was a wonderful man. And then I got to Roberta's office, and the girls were hugging me, the other nurses, and she grabbed me in her room real quick. And I said, you know, Roberta, I just want to let you know how much Fred loved you. I love you. We want to appreciate you for all the good care you've done for him. At that point, I did feel a little bit of panic because I was separated from Patty, you know, and I was like, ah. But it was okay. And she started bringing something up on the screen, and she said, Karen, because they had taken him off the interferon because he was having some lower back pains. And she said, you know, I've been in this business for over 30 years. And she goes, and she put something up on the screen, and she said, this is the beginning of bone cancer. So again, I'm going to say God really took him at the most perfect time. And going home that night, I remember we stopped at a restaurant and we kind of talked to the nurse or the waitress about it. And she goes, oh my gosh, that whole highway was blocked off. They had the helicopters and the dogs and everything out there because it was a hit and run. And they did catch the guys in a field. And so going forward, you know, he would have gone out with a bang. He loved those detective stories and all that police stuff. But, you know, it wasn't an option to drink because you guys never left my frickin' side. There was a gentleman in the morning meeting that I used to attend. His name was John, and he used to say how grateful he was to Alcoholics Anonymous because when his wife died of cancer, you guys surrounded him. And I used to think in my little selfish, self-centered head, don't dampen my cloud, my pink cloud I'm on. I don't want to hear that. I am so grateful that he shared that in that 7 a.m. meeting. Because you guys never left my side. That night when we came home, Patty had told me I had to go to the business meeting with her. And I'm like, no, I want to go home. And I had just started chairing that meeting, and it was a newcomer meeting on Wednesdays. I had missed that meeting. And she told me a story about, in her early sobriety, about how she remembered there was a woman up at the podium, and she only had a few months of sobriety, that shared about her mom had just died, and she didn't know where else to go but the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, and that it had a profound impact on her. And I thought, well, that's nice. I still wanted to go home, but I said, okay, I'll go to the business meeting if I can wear my sunglasses. My eyes were red and puffy. So we pull up to that business meeting, and there is Ardith and Pam, two newcomers in sobriety outside that door that I'm getting ready to walk into. And they ask me, what are you doing here? We just heard Fred was killed. And I got to respond, where else do I have to go? And so I did. I went to that business meeting, not happy about it. And then shortly after that business meeting, I told Patty, I don't think I should be chairing that newcomers meeting on Wednesdays. I don't think I can. It hurt to hear laughter in the rooms. And she goes, oh no, I think you should. There was also another question about the gal that had asked me to be her sponsor. Her name was Karen as well. She asked Patty if she should be looking for a new sponsor because, you know, I just lost my husband. Patty's response to her was, she's going to need you more than you need her. That did keep me sober. Through this process, I remember talking to Patty. I'm so grateful for these rooms. Even if I wanted to drink, you guys surrounded me. I had a militant atheist do the celebration of life for my husband, and he orchestrated it beautifully. He was no longer, I don't think he's a militant atheist anymore. He's very quiet about his own spirituality, but you can tell by his actions, he doesn't need to speak. So that was a beautiful, beautiful day that day. You know, it was hard, but beautiful. And then came the part that I was real worried about. The gentleman who had killed my husband, I remember talking to Patty about how I need to do a mini fourth step. You know, that's what we do after we do the steps and you have a resentment and you do the whole process and you work it out, right? And I'm like, Patty, I got to do something. I don't know what I'm going to do. I don't want to resent this gentleman. And she goes, just wait, just wait, just wait. And I'm like, okay. And the court came up that he was killed in September and we had to go to court in November. And I really had a dream team. They were amazing. The prosecutors were amazing. And I had an opportunity during that court proceeding to write a statement about who Fred was and the man that he had become. Actually, Patty helped me edit it and she helped me, I got to practice it on her hundreds of times. And I remember the prosecutor said, okay, Karen, I'll be up there with you. And if you start crying at any point, hand me that and I can do it for you. And Patty said, no, she's got this. She'll be fine. And in my head, I'm thinking, what the heck? But you know, these rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous help me with that. You know, we share in meetings. It's called Language of the Heart. And it was amazing because they had also warned me that he had no remorse. You go right ahead and share this, but he has no remorse. Well, there happened to be a translator in there because he did not speak English. So I stood up there and I read my tribute to Fred. And about halfway through, he started crying. And something really weird happened. I had forgiveness. Now, I know that's nothing I can do myself. That came from a power greater than myself that I found in steps 2 and 3 in this program. And I didn't cry. I made it back to my seat and I sat down, but my sponsor was bawling. I'm like, what the heck? And, you know, the Spirit of God was in that courtroom that day. That's what I can say. God did for me what I could not do for myself. You know, when we had to walk back to the prosecutor's office, and I remember walking with them. I actually got asked by a couple, I don't know if you remember this, but by a couple reporters if I had anything to say, because it was a big deal. And I said, you know, I said what I needed to say in the courtroom. And as we're walking, the prosecutors were like, we've never seen anything like that in a courtroom happen. And I know, that just helped solidify my relationship with God at that moment. And it wasn't easy. It wasn't easy being a widow in early sobriety. But again, I had service commitments, and then I got asked to be a sponsor again. And that is how I stayed sober through this. It was, you know, service and sponsoring and going to meetings and doing everything that you guys said and growing that prayer and meditation, you know. Okay, so I'm going to fast forward. It has been quite the journey of spirituality in this program. I would think that the sponsorship, I love sponsoring because that's when I get to see someone who is not the same person when they walk into these rooms, sit here, or someone that I've been sponsoring for a while, 2014. And she had her little boy in a stroller, you know. I get to watch these miracles happen. It is such a gift in sobriety. And I think I was really nervous about this part because I had, you know, our story continues in sobriety. We have a lot of things happen to us that we can survive. We have a lot of good things. I hiked Lake Havasupai Falls, you know, with a couple of ladies in sobriety. That was one of the most spiritual experiences I've ever had. That was amazing. But recently in 2021, my mom got diagnosed with Alzheimer's and dementia. She lived in California. My sister was close to her, so we had a lot of work to do, you know, and we did it. Me and my sister, we just shoulder to shoulder, we did it. Thank you, God, to this program. You know, we did it, and recently my mom's health was failing, and so I've been going there for long periods of time the last couple months, and I got this call recently, you know, from my sister going, well, you know, I'm not telling you to come or not, you know, and that's how, she was very honest with me, and I was very grateful. And I was standing outside. I live out in Waddell now, and I'm very passionate about my animals, and I have a couple horses, and one of them's a rescue, and I have a couple rescue dogs, and I have 2 rescue chickens. 2 that aren't rescue chickens, they're replacements, but anyway, that's my passion right now, you know, and I love it. I've always wanted to do it, and dreams do come true in this program. And I remember thinking, well, it's not time to go yet, you know, and I'm thinking, and I'm walking out there, and this thought came out of freaking nowhere, and I know it wasn't of me, but again, it was from the St. Francis prayer, and it said, it's better to give comfort than to be comforted. And I had been saying all along with my sister, I'm good, she's in great care, she has very spiritual people around her, she doesn't need me, I know she's okay. At that moment when I heard that, I went, really, God? And I went in, I told my husband, it was 4 o'clock that day, and I landed in Sacramento at 9:30 that night, and I stayed by my mom's bedside for a couple hours that night, and then the next couple days, and she passed January 19th at 11:21 a.m. in the morning. And me and my sister got to help transition her to heaven. That's my belief, to a better place. She's no longer suffering. And you know, my sister was praying over her. And you know the prayer I was saying that gave me comfort was the Lord's Prayer that we say all the time in this room, all the time. That gave me comfort. That night, I found myself in a meeting in Little Dixon, California. And they said, how'd you find a meeting in this podunk town? And I started laughing. I'd been to a couple meetings there. And I was thinking I was going to get out of Sharon that night, right? I was just going to keep my mouth shut. I'm just a visitor. She said, the gal that, it was a speaker meeting, and you had to write your name down on things. And she goes, okay, we got 3 minutes left. And I'm like, whew, I made it. She goes, let's hear from the visitor from Arizona. And I said, you know, my name. And then I said, you know, I'm grateful for these rooms. And just so you know, my mother passed today. And this is where I need to be, was in the rooms with you people. And they thanked me for sharing. And oh, don't you know, there was a lady there that talked to me afterwards and said that her mother has been diagnosed with Alzheimer's and dementia, and we exchanged phone numbers. This program works, you know. It's just amazing what can happen. The joy, though, that I know that I feel when my mom's soul left this earth was incredible. I know she's in a better place, you know, and I hope that someday I feel that this transition can, you know, I can help other women through it when they lose their mom. I know that this program has helped me and my sister get stronger. I have a niece and nephew that are raging alcoholics, and I believe I give my sister hope. She knows a little bit more about this program because she knows what I do to stay sober. When I got home, you know, I also had a 12-step call I had to go on, and I'm grateful. She was still drinking, but she called, and she said, I can't stop. So I got to take her. I called another alcoholic to meet me there. And we ended up taking her. She ended up detoxing. But she was supposed to be here. But today she's going to a 30-day recovery home. I hope she can be with us next year, because she was here last year. She's really struggling to stay sober. But those are the things that help me stay sober, because I don't want to go back there again. My life is really good today because of you people, because of the big book, the steps, and the higher power that I have today. Thank you for letting me share.